This is CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, the voice of the voiceless. In today's Brown Bagger, we hear from Canadians and Palestinians concerned not only with recent events that have stunned the world, but also the sad anniversary of 40 years of occupation. A new group called the Canada-Palestine Support Network has been created, and it includes our own Member of Parliament, Libby Davis. This recording was made June 6, 2007 at the Vancouver Public Library, as posted on the net by pacifica.ca, that's pacifica with a K, .ca, and it's followed by a question and answer period recorded by the Brown Bagger staff here at CFRO. The night was called 40 Years of Occupation and the Prospects for Peace. We will hear from the Chancellor Emeritus of the University of Massachusetts, Nasir Arouri, from Sven Robinson and others, but first, the Toronto photojournalist John Ilmer brings us up to speed on the recent takeover of the Gaza Strip by Hamas and the almost unknown role that Canada has played in the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands.
My name is Erica Lamacraft, and on behalf of the Canada-Palestine Support Network, I'd like to welcome you all here this evening. Thank you so much for coming. Tonight's forum is called 40 Years of Occupation and the Prospects for Peace. Ken Palmette has organized tonight's event, and with solidarity organizations in the Lower Mainland, there are several other events that are marking the 40 years of Israeli occupation of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem.
I think people are fairly familiar at this point of Canada's position in regards to the sanctions regime that's been leveled at the Palestinians for making the mistake of democratically electing a party that the Canadian government and the European Union and the United States disagreed with. But the UN Human Rights Commission has called the sanctions regime imposed on the Palestinians, which is incidentally the first ever imposed on an already occupied population. Generally, sanctions are a tool to end occupations, not to reinforce them. But the United Nations Human Rights Council called them, quote, possibly the most rigorous form of international sanctions imposed in modern times. That's fairly diplomatic language, because when you impose sanctions on a national liberation struggle, it's very different than the sanctions regimes that we saw brutalize a place like Iraq throughout the 1990s. And there's no time to talk about these kind of things. But of course, Canadian frigates in the Persian Gulf were enforcing that sanctions regime against Iraq, stopping things like rubber balls and diapers and potties and such from getting. These are dual-use items that Canada stopped from getting in. Of course, Canadian bombers dropped bombs in Iraq during the Gulf War in 1991. We were involved in the war and the disintegration of Yugoslavia throughout the 1990s, dropping bombs ultimately in Kosovo, which was, despite the fact that the Iraq War was framed as the disintegration of international law under the American hegemony of the world, we can remember back that 1999's war on Kosovo was actually without a UN mandate and was actually really the pillar that broke down United Nations humanitarian law up to that point. So Peter McKay says immediately after Hamas is elected, not one red cent to Hamas. So what does that mean? Of course, it means not one red cent to the Palestinian Authority, which is not a state and is completely dependent on international aid to exist at all. So that means not one red cent to 1,600 Palestinian schools, many of which I've witnessed have three shifts of school because there's not enough classrooms for all the kids. That means not one red cent to 438 hospitals and clinics. Palestinians call them hospitals, but I would hardly call them even a clinic. In many of the refugee camps, there's nothing like a hospital in the refugee camps where the overwhelming majority of the Palestinian population live. This is a sanctions regime that was prefaced by Dov Weisglass, who is essentially the Karl Rove to Olmert and Sharon's government, when he said that what we need to do is have the Palestinians consult a dietitian. He said we want them to, quote, lose weight but not to starve to death. Well, the World Food Program just issued a report recently where they said 1.1 million out of 1.4 million people in the Gaza Strip are totally dependent on food aid, quote, without which they are liable to starve, right, exactly as Dov Weisglass said, enforced by Canada. Oxfam just released a report that said 50% of Palestinian families in the West Bank and Gaza Strip have seen their annual income in the year 2006 drop by 50%. So people can, again, imagine for a moment what it would be like if you lost 50% of your income, and then that's half the population. It's a siege warfare that's being inflicted on the Gaza Strip and West Bank. And of course, we talked about international law all night, but siege warfare was literally the first form of international law in dealing with laws of war and conflict, that it was illegal and immoral and impractical as a tactic of war to starve a population to death. This is the oldest form of international law in Canada, dubiously on the wrong side of that. So what happened in the year 2006, while Canada maintained and enforced a sanctions regime against the Palestinians, B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights group, said that the death toll in the year 2006, 683 Palestinians, 19 Israelis, 11 of whom were in the occupied West Bank. So 683 in essence to 8. That's the toll in a year when sanctions were imposed on the population that saw 683 people killed. You have in 1 month alone, in November of 2006, and people can remember that 2006 was defined as really an attack on Gaza, well, in the West Bank, which almost never made the news, in November of 2006 alone, there was 656 Israeli military raids into the West Bank. There's still 500 checkpoints, and on and on and on. I only have 10 minutes, so I want to try to stay on point. So this is because Hamas was elected, but previous to that, Canada was upstanding towards the Palestinians, unless we're talking about their previous leadership, the Palestine Liberation Organization. 1974, Yasser Arafat gave a famous speech at the United Nations, which is framed as his gun in the olive branch speech, where he offered national resistance or peace, 1974, which was followed in the United Nations by a vote of 89-8 in favor of Palestinian independence and sovereignty. Canada voted against that. A few hours later, there was a vote about Palestine Liberation Organization gaining observer status at the United Nations, which was a first for a national liberation struggle and quite an impressive achievement for the Palestinians at that time, and Canada chose to vote against that. In 1975, just to sort of take it one step further, there was a United Nations conference being held on crime in Toronto. The United Nations conference are held throughout the world and is part of being a United Nations member to hold these conferences. Well, Canada actually refused to hold the conference if the PLO attended the conference as an observer. This is at a time when Time magazine was reporting that 90% of Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza supported the PLO as their representative. So Canada, again, it wasn't until the mid-1970s that Canada even began to call Palestinians Palestinians and change the language from Arab refugees to Palestinian refugees. And this is on and on. But I want to make sure that people don't think that this is just a conservative policy, because in 2004, Alan Rock stood before the United Nations, addressed the General Assembly, 180 nations, and said that Canada, like Madeleine Albright before him, said that Canada was no longer going to be voting for voting in favor of these Palestinian resolutions on sovereignty and human rights and egregious violations of international law carried out by Israel in their armed conflict in the West Bank and Gaza. And just to sort of reinforce that, after the World Court voted unanimously that the wall that's ghettoizing the Palestinian population was illegal, must be dismantled, and the Palestinians must be compensated, Canada decided to show this policy when they abstained, politically and pointedly abstained from the UN vote that went 150-6 with the United States, Israel, and a few protectorates, effectively taking that United Nations resolution off the table. History will not reflect well on Canada being not a part of that resolution as the ghettoization of the Palestinians becomes clear to the world in the decades to come. But the Harper regime is what we're dealing with right now. And in January 2007, while I was in the Gaza Strip, watching the fighting all around me that was supported, as I'll mention, by Canada, Peter McKay was in Israel meeting with Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni, who said that Canada was among Israel's greatest friends in the world for three distinct reasons, and these are important for all Canadians. Number one, because of Canada's role in the war in Lebanon, where Canada operated, actively discouraged a ceasefire in a war that killed more than 1,000 Lebanese civilians, because that was Israeli policy. Israel didn't want a ceasefire. They wanted to destroy Hezbollah, which is a popular movement and impossible to destroy, and Canada backed that. Number two, the sanctions regime against Hamas. Number three, and this should be important to all Canadians, was that, and in Livni's words, that Canada was, quote, quote, at the vanguard of the isolation of Iran related to the nuclear issue. And DFATE released a press release to us journalists in the area that said, quote, our message in the region is clear. So while McKay was there, he met with a U.S. general named Lieutenant General Keith Dayton, who is actually the head for the U.S. of this of the Israel-Palestine region, the head of U.S. security. U.S. Has security generals all over the world. And McKay said that, Canada was going to be giving $1.2 million in aid money to the Palestinians. And this would be bypassing the Hamas government as part of what is called the Carney Project. Well, the Carney Project has been openly discussed now 6 months on, and it's essentially to train a proxy force, essentially a coup force that is going to operate without any government authority against the Hamas government. They're going to be trained in order to guard the exits of the ghettos. All of the Palestinian areas are being encircled by a wall, and there's only one way to leave it. So Canada is training the guards that are going to guard the exits to the ghettos. Again, very dishonorable place for Canada. And this is what Condoleezza Rice said while she stood beside Peter McKay in Jerusalem. She said, I do know that if Hamas has strong forces and Abbas does not, that is not good for the United States, and it is most certainly not good for Israel. She said, there are Canadian counterparts in the army who are working closely with Dayton, and it was a joke amongst Canada staffers that half the the corps that was training, the officers that are training this Palestine coup force are Canadian. And that shouldn't be surprising to Canadians when we have forces operating in Haiti. We have forces training Iraqi forces, security forces, so-called security forces in Jordan, and you have the training, of course, of the Afghan army as a principal of Canada's occupation of Afghanistan. This is what Sean McCormick, the State Department spokesperson in charge of the portfolio for training this security force that Canada is involved in. He said, he said this at a press conference, you have Keith Dayton, General Dayton, on the ground in Palestine, who continues to work on the real down in the weeds, blocking and tackling work of helping to build up security forces. Now that may not be very newsworthy in terms of big headlines flashed across the newspaper or the lead story on the nightly news, but it's important and essential work. So this is Canada, intimately involved in important and essential work of training a force to operate against the government for the main reason, number one, the sanctions regime that Canada has imposed over the last year has clearly failed to dislodge Hamas. In fact, it's probably strengthened Hamas while destroying the Palestinian economy and the possibility of a sovereign state emerging. And so it's necessary to move on to the second stage, and that is violent overthrow. Again, none of this should be surprising. If we were talking about the United States, this wouldn't be controversial at all. But however, talking for some reason in Canada to a Canadian audience that Canada's rule around the world acts against the interests of national liberation movements and people's struggles is somehow controversial, and I want to just keep that in mind. Canada is playing an integral role and is deeply proud of it, and you can see it all through their foreign policy statements. Thank you.
You are tuned to CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, listener-supported radio. We have just heard Toronto photojournalist John Elmer describing recent events in Palestine and our role as Canadians in this 40-year-long occupation. Now we go to a panel presentation at the Vancouver Public Library, June 6, 2007. The recording opens with Mordecai Breenberg and Sven Robinson. Later you will hear the distinctive voice of Nasir Arouri, Chancellor Emeritus of the University of Massachusetts.
When there was apartheid in South Africa, people were not asked, are you from South Africa? Have you lived in South Africa? Are you black? Are you Dutch? Are you British? Are you Indian by origin? All that was necessary was for a Canadian to examine what was happening in that country and to see if there was an injustice and to take a position on remedying that injustice. And our attitude towards the conflict in Palestine and Israel is exactly the same. This week marks 40 years after Israel's invasion of the territories of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem. An Israeli poet has said it was a six-day war and a 40-year coma. he was referring to the Jewish Israeli population as being basically in denial of what was happening in that territory. That occupation has defied the unanimous motion resolution passed by the Security Council. It has violated international laws, particularly the treaties signed after World War II and the Geneva Conventions. And it has created segregated living conditions, which are the exact antithesis of equality of rights. Around the world today, and during this week, many popular organizations, from unions, churches, human rights organizations, organizations dealing with poverty, are marking their and stating their opposition to this occupation and the need for it to end. In England, they've organized a campaign which is rallying around one simple word: enough.
Today, well, yesterday actually, was the 40th anniversary of the Six-Day War, or the June 1967 War. I think that the most important question that comes to mind is what is the significance of this event that happened 40 years ago? What impact does it have, or will it have, on the Arabs, on the Palestinians, on the Israelis, and also on the world community, because all of them are involved. Now, there's been a debate about the war, whether it was a war of choice or a war of necessity. I think that I'm confident that it was not a war of necessity, in the sense that there is a good deal of evidence in various libraries, one of which would be the LBJ, Lyndon Johnson Presidential Library in Texas, that showed some important facts about the fact that Egypt really had no intention of going to war at that time. In fact, there is something that we knew right along for 40 years, that the Egyptian Vice President Zakaria Muhyiddin was practically on his way from Cairo to Washington to assure the Americans that Nasser had no intent whatsoever to go to war, that he was realistic. Maybe some of the speeches were bombastic, but that is something that people factor in usually into war and diplomacy. I think that we have evidence also from Israeli generals who participated in that war, such as Matityahu Peled, who clearly stated that at no point was Israel threatened with extinction, or there was any threat to its national security, not to say anything about its survival. So the war of 1967, just like the war of 1948, in my view, were both really wars of choice rather than a war of necessity. The question is that this has ushered in an occupation. And as we all know, military occupations are regulated by international law. There are rights and privileges to the occupant, the occupier, as we say colloquially, and the occupied people. There is a set of rules that prevails usually until the occupation ends. But the most important thing about this occupation is that it hasn't ended, but it has really escalated. It has become more and more entrenched as the time goes by, which leads a number of people, including myself, to conclude that this is no occupation. It is not really an occupation in the ordinary sense of the term occupation, that is regulated by international law and under international law and humanitarian international law. What is it then? I think it is politicide. The term politicide is more accurate than occupation. And although many scholars have talked about politicide, the definition that I like most, or that I think is really comes closer to reality and describes the situation, was offered by the late Baruch Kimmerling. I'm sorry to say the late, because this happened only last week that Baruch Kimmerling has passed away. He's a sociologist, Israeli sociologist. And in a book that carries the same title, Politicide, he defined it as the following, and I quote. He said, politicide is a process that has as its ultimate goal the dissolution of the Palestinian people's existence as a legitimate national, social, economic entity, and may also include partial or total ethnic cleansing. And he adds, he says, it is a process that covers a wide range of social, political, and military activities whose goal is to destroy the political and national existence of a whole community of people and thus deny it the possibility of self-determination.
It was, I guess, almost 20 years ago at the time of the first Intifada that I was involved as a member of the Canadian Parliament in the founding of the first Canada-Palestine Parliamentary Solidarity Group. And I'm really pleased to see that we have a message of support and solidarity from two former colleagues in the House of Commons, Rael Menard and my old friend Libby Davies, who have just founded, once again, a Canada-Palestine Parliamentary Association and have sent a message of support.
It is an all-party committee. That is, this party, this committee in the House of Commons has members from the New Democratic Party, from the Bloc Québécois, from the Liberal Party, and actually a member of the Conservative Party is on it. And they sent us this message. Dear friends, the newly founded Canada-Palestine Parliamentary Association wishes to extend its greetings of support and solidarity to the Canada-Palestine Support Network. We join many citizens and activists in calling for an end to the illegal 40-year occupation of Palestinian lands by Israel. We call for an end to the siege on the people of the West Bank and Gaza. And we call on the Canadian government to support the democratically elected Palestinian government and for an end to the international blockade. We believe that Canada must uphold international law and human rights. We welcome Dr. Nasir Arouri and his presence in Vancouver, British Columbia, and we hope that his dialogue will strengthen support and understanding for the crisis affecting Palestinians. Yours sincerely, Rael Menard, co-chair, House of Commons, the Canada-Palestine Parliamentary Association, and Libby Davies, who's a member of Parliament from Vancouver East, who is secretary-treasurer of the same association.
We're here today to once again, on this 40th anniversary, call for an end to the occupation, an occupation which is illegal, which is immoral, and which is a humanitarian outrage. I say illegal because, of course, it has been condemned by the United Nations. It's illegal under the provisions of the Geneva Conventions. The wall of shame, the illegal wall, has been condemned by the International Court of Justice. So from every possible perspective, it is illegal. It is immoral and unjust and a humanitarian outrage for anyone who has eyes to see and ears to hear the appalling conditions that the Palestinian people are living in. And certainly I've witnessed that firsthand on many occasions, the terrible living conditions, the grinding poverty, the brutality of the occupation, the humiliation, the daily humiliation of the occupation, the destruction of houses and so on. So we're here today to call once again for an end to that occupation. and as Canadians, to call on our own government to end their, not only their shameful silence, but even worse, their active complicity in this moral outrage, in this illegal occupation, in the current siege that is taking place. As a Canadian, I am saddened and ashamed of the position that my government has taken. Just yesterday, Amnesty International issued a powerful report on the occupation, marking the 40th anniversary, and they called for permanent international monitoring in the occupied territories and reporting of human rights violations. They condemned the wall and the growth of settlements, the checkpoints, the humiliation, the collapse of the Palestinian economy. And I want to join my voice with theirs, and I know that Dr. Aruria is very active with Amnesty as well, in calling for that international presence. I'm a Canadian. I carry a Canadian passport. My country is Canada. The Palestinian people have no passport. They have no country. That must end. That tragedy must end. The occupation must end. And Canada's complicity in this must be condemned as well.
We have a sacred responsibility of never doing what is unjust. Back in the end of the 67 war, the United Nations decision was that Israel must return to the boundaries set for its establishment between 47 and 49. So Israel's continuous occupation of more and more territory, which lawfully belongs to Palestine, is a most serious violation of justice, and it must be stopped. All of us have a responsibility to call for justice, to call for justice, to call that the United Nations really use every effort that it can to call all the nations to say, this is wrong, this is unjust. We set the boundaries, Israel must respect them and keep the law. So Canada must support the international laws of justice by the Canadian government's de facto support of this occupation is supporting lawlessness and violating the sacred responsibilities to make decisions based on justice for all nations as well as individuals. As an American, I am ashamed that the United States, usually for political reasons, gives massive support in the billions to Israel. So all I say is we all have a responsibility to call for justice wherever the violation of a human rights is happening. Thank you.
QP's main role as a union is to negotiate wages and working conditions for our membership. But in understanding the challenges that we're up against, we formed a solidarity committee so we could reach out to workers in other countries to look at the attacks that the working class was under around the world. And one of the first things that is violated in any country when you attack the working class are their human rights. So I mean, I could go through and talk about, we're all well aware of the attack that Palestinian people are under. There's massive unemployment. They're in desperate situations. And many of them don't have the right to go to work, to school, or to a hospital because of the wall that has been built. We had tremendous support from your committee in actually putting out the Wall Must Fall document that we use as a education primer for our membership to help them understand the issues that are involved in this occupation. So without taking out much more time, we truly hope that eventually we can find peace in the Middle East, but it has to be based on equality, justice, and human rights.
Is there an existing or discussion of cultural boycott of Israel, like we saw with apartheid South Africa?
There is one in Europe. Certainly, I know that the English, for instance, as you know, the British, British trade teachers have the teachers union and university professors union have they voted for a motion for boycott Israel institutions. As far as I remember, you had something like that in France. I was certainly part of it, and there's some you had. Is there other means of action? You have disinvestment, for instance. Disinvestment seems more popular in the United States. You have efforts towards that. But
we welcome Dr. Nasir Arouri and his presence in Vancouver, British Columbia, and we hope that his dialogue will strengthen support and understanding for the crisis affecting Palestinians. Yours sincerely, Réal Ménard, co-chair, House of Commons, the Canada-Palestine Parliamentary Association, and Libby Davies, who's a member of Parliament from Vancouver East, who is secretary-treasurer of the same association.
We're here today to, once again, on this 40th anniversary, call for an end to the occupation, an occupation which is illegal, which is immoral, and which is a humanitarian outrage. I say illegal because, of course, it has been condemned by the United Nations. It's illegal under the provisions of the Geneva Conventions. The wall of shame, the illegal wall, has been condemned by the International Court of Justice. So from every possible perspective, it is illegal. It is immoral and unjust and a humanitarian outrage for anyone who has eyes to see and ears to hear the appalling conditions that the Palestinian people are living in. And certainly I've witnessed that firsthand on many occasions, the terrible living conditions, the grinding poverty, the brutality of the occupation, the humiliation, the daily humiliation of the occupation, the destruction of houses and so on. So we're here today to call once again for an end to that occupation, and as Canadians, to call on our own government to end their, not only their shameful silence, but even worse, their active complicity in this moral outrage, in this illegal occupation, in the current siege that is taking place. As a Canadian, I am saddened and ashamed of the position that my government has taken. Just yesterday, Amnesty International issued a powerful report on the occupation, marking the 40th anniversary, and they called for permanent international monitoring in the occupied territories and reporting of human rights violations. They condemned the wall and the growth of settlements, the checkpoints, the humiliation, the collapse of the Palestinian economy. And I want to join my voice with theirs, and I know that Dr. Arouri is very active with Amnesty as well, in calling for that international presence. I'm a Canadian. I carry a Canadian passport. My country is Canada. The Palestinian people have no passport. They have no country. That must end. That tragedy must end. The occupation must end. And Canada's complicity in this must be condemned as well.
We have a sacred responsibility of never doing what is unjust. Back in the end of the 67 war, the United Nations decision was that Israel must return to the boundaries set for its establishment between 47 and 49. So Israel's continuous occupation of more and more territory, which lawfully belongs to Palestine, is a most serious violation of justice, and it must be stopped. All of us have a responsibility to call for justice. To call for justice. To call that the United Nations really use every effort that it can to call all the nations to say, this is wrong. This is unjust. we set the boundaries, Israel must respect them and keep the law. So Canada must support the international laws of justice by the Canadian government's de facto support of this occupation is supporting lawlessness and violating the sacred responsibilities to make decisions based on justice for all nations as well as individuals. As an American, I am ashamed that the United States, usually for political reasons, gives massive support in the billions to Israel. So all I say is we all have a responsibility to call for justice wherever the violation of a human rights is happening. Thank you.
QP's main role as a union is to negotiate wages and working conditions for our membership. But in understanding the challenges that we're up against, we formed a solidarity committee so we could reach out to workers in other countries to look at the attacks that the working class was under around the world. And one of the first things that is violated in any country when you attack the working class are their human rights. So, I mean, I could go through and talk about, we're all well aware of the attack that Palestinian people are under. There's massive unemployment. They're in desperate situations. And many of them don't have the right to go to work, to school, or to a hospital because of the wall that has been built. We had tremendous support from your committee in actually putting out the Wall Must Fall document that we use as an education primer for our membership to help them understand the issues that are involved in this occupation. So without taking up much more time, we truly hope that eventually we can find peace in the Middle East, but it has to be based on equality, justice, and human rights.
Is there an existing or discussion of cultural boycotts of Israel, like we saw with apartheid South Africa?
There is one in Europe. Certainly. I know that Dick English, for instance, as you know, the British trade teachers, have the teachers union and university professors union have they voted for a motion for boycott of Israeli institutions, as far as I remember. You had something like that in France. I was certainly part of it. And there's some you had. Is there other means of action? You have disinvestment, for instance. Disinvestment seems more popular in the United States. You have efforts towards that. But it is also a fact that Israeli institutions take part in many ways into the occupation, and they should not be supported for that.
There's been more awareness of the existence of opposition within Israel to Israeli state policies and to the Israeli occupation. And I think here in North America, there's been more awareness of the fact that concern for Israelis as a people, as a society, it's not the same as uncritical support for the Israeli state or for the Israeli government. And I think there has been more awareness of the existence of Israeli anti-occupation groups and Israeli draft resistors. And I think this also has to be more widely known.
A couple of the speakers have said that they feel ashamed by what the Canadian government has done recently, and I'd like to add my voice to that. And as Lee Lakeman said, that in fact our own children are being put at risk by some of the things that are happening. And I'd just like to mention the war in Lebanon, where our government said that the Israeli response was a measured response. There were literally hundreds of children killed in that war, and it seems to me that our government is basically taking Canadian children and saying, put them on the firing line too, because you can't say it's okay to kill Lebanese children and then say that Canadian children are not okay. So I have to ask the question, what is the occupation doing to us? And I think that Dr. Aruri mentioned that. It's not just, of course, the Palestinians are the major victims of the occupation, but what is it doing to us? As a Jewish person, what is it doing to the Jewish people? When you harm people, when you do injustice to others, you are actually destroying a piece of yourself. And the more that we harm Palestinian people, the more that we are harmed. So I may be selfish of me, but I'd like to say that this occupation is hurting Jewish people and Canadian people and people all over the world.
You have just heard a panel that included Mordecai Brinberg, Sven Robinson, and Nasir Aruri, as presented by the Canada-Palestine Support Network at the Vancouver Public Library, June 6th. This is the Brown Bagger Show, the Tuesday edition, where we strive to bring you the best of local speeches right here on CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver.